I go on a lot of different shows, TV shows sometimes. Of course, I've been with ESPN for many years, as is my guest. But when I go on a lot of these sort of news shows where they don't know that much about tennis, they will say, here's Patrick McEnroe, the Hall of Famer. And I said, no. Hold on a second. I'm the president of the Hall of Fame. Okay? I wish I could be a Hall of Famer, but that only goes to the super elite. I do know a guy from my family who's in the Hall of Fame. That would be Mr. John McEnroe, of course. Give it up for him. Why not? And this young lady has worked with myself, has worked with my brother John for many, many years at ESPN, also years way before that at NBC. But she also is in the Hall of Fame as a player, one of the greatest players of all time. Without further ado, let's get her up here. The one and only Chris Evert, everybody. Get up here, come on. It's like me. See that? Like, routine for her. Routine. Chrissy, amazing to see you. How's it feel to be back? Because you come back quite a bit. By the way, we have the Chris Evert Learning Center, which is over here, which is was named last year as part of Team Fame, which is our organization that helps youth in this area, underserved youth. It's a phenomenal place. If you can go check it out. But it's great to have you back, Chrissy. Your Chris Evert Learning Center will be there forever. But how does it feel to come back to Newport?
There's just so much to do. I mean, I don't know where to look. Everything's happening, you know, and the sponsors have been great. But talking a little bit about the Learning Center, they created that last year, and that was the induction of that Learning Center. I think the Hall of Fame has really done a great job in recognizing that there is room to help those less fortunate. And we're all fortunate here, but it's basically about the underserved kids in this community that really don't have the opportunities to fulfill, you know, what dreams that they have. So this facility is an after-school program during the school time, and it's about having a safe haven for kids. And at the same time, teaching them tennis, and at the same time, helping them with after-school their homework and tutoring them. And I think the one that I love the most is the mentorship of these kids. And, you know, I just think it's a wonderful prospect, and it's encompassing the whole child, the whole kid, and not just, you know, not just tennis.
Right.
You know, emotional, mental, and
right. Needs. Well, you often talk about your upbringing in South Florida. And by the way, Chris has had her own charitable foundation down there, Chris Evert Charities. I've been at her event there many, many times in the Boca Raton area. But where you grew up in Hollywood, and you always talked about how, because your dad was your first coach and your siblings played as well, that was your safe haven, going to the park.
Holiday Park,
where you learned how to play tennis. So I know that's still near and dear to your heart.
I just think it is. I mean, it was funny because I'd always ask my dad afterwards. There are five kids in our family, and my sister Jeannie and I were tennis professionals, and the other three kids played number one for their college, and my father didn't have to pay a cent, okay? They got scholarships.
That helped too,
I think he was more proud of them than me, you know, really, because we came from a very middle-class family. And one time I just asked him, why did you get us all into tennis? And I was thinking that he was going to say, you know, because you get to travel the world, or because it's good to set goals, or instead he said, to keep you kids off the streets. And I thought that was, like, not a very sexy answer. I was not happy with that. I go, wow, what a downer, you know? And but as I got old, got older, my dad got smarter, because I have three kids and I get it entirely. And this is what this is, a safe haven for kids. And you got to keep them busy after school, not just let them have all that idle time.
Well, because you had tennis was in your family's blood, I want to ask you this, Chris. I've never asked you this before, and I don't think I've ever heard you talk about this, which is why I'm going to ask.
I'm afraid.
Chris, she's never afraid, okay? I've seen her under pressure so many times. When did you realize that you could be a great tennis player?
Good question. Okay. When I was 13 years old, I was probably number one in the state of Florida, maybe, you know, top two or three in the country. But I was 13 years old, and my dad had a tournament at Holiday Park, which was a professional tournament. And somehow he slid me in there, and I got into the tournament, and I reached the semifinals, and I lost to Marianne Eisel, who was number four in the world, but I lost her in three sets.
Wow.
I remember I got a set from her. She's number four in the world, and I was 13. And I think that was when I realized that, hey, there's not a big gap.
Right.
You know, this is doable. There's not a big gap. Now, with all due respect, in those days, it was a lot different than in these days, okay? There's a lot more players now. The game has changed. There's more, you know, the rackets are different, the strings are different, and there's 10 times the amount of players. So not to say that would ever happen in this day, but in that day, that was enough for me to give me that, you know, motivation.
How about 18 major singles titles? When did you think that was possible? By the way, well done on that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Not to mention a few in doubles as well. She was also a great doubles player.
Well, I was a good doubles player. I don't know. I just was kind of like, at a very young age, tennis made me feel good about myself. You know, gave me the self-esteem when I was on the court. I was very shy. And I think, you know, kids, you know, young in life, especially with social media, I think it's a very difficult time. And I think they need things. They need that self-esteem. They need to do things that they're good at, that they feel good about themselves. And I was very fortunate in doing that at a young age. So it just snowballed and snowballed and snowballed. Local tournaments, state tournaments, national tournaments, and then, you know, Grand Slams. And once you get going with the momentum, you don't want to stop. And I never look back.
You were undeniably the greatest clay court player that's ever lived as a woman. You were obviously amazing on the other surfaces as well. Everybody knows about your incredible rivalry with Martina. You guys are great friends now after all these years. A match or two, or a memory of one of those matches, or something that stands out more. I mean, there's so many, obviously, but is there one or two that you say that changed everything for me? Or that's the one I always wanted to dream about winning?
We played 80 times in tournaments. 80. I think that's more than any two players have played. I have to say, there's a two-year period where Martina beat me 13 times in a row. I hate to say it, you know, it's like, it kills me to say it, but it was like, why couldn't you figure out a way to beat her, you know? Anyway, she beat me 13 times in a row, and that's when I learned, finally it hit me, you dummy, you're going to have to do something different. You just can't keep playing the same way. I kept thinking I was beating everybody else playing my game, but not Martina. But you know what? I didn't have, you know, the courage to change a few things or to take some risks. So that was the French Open in 85, and I beat her in three sets. And it happened during a major tournament. And I think that was when things changed completely around, because I started coming into the net and I was playing more aggressively and I was serving bigger. And, you know, I always thought with Martina during those 13 years, if you can't beat them, join them. So I'd get into the gym, you know, whenever I could. And I tried to get stronger, but I could never be as strong as her because she's a phenomenal athlete. But so you just have to change things if they're not working, and persevere, you know, just keep trying.
Well, you obviously, as you know, I've heard you talk about that a lot, went into the gym, started taking your fitness more seriously. I mean, you obviously could play tennis all day long. What were the things you did on the tennis court that were to make you a little bit better? Was it just, like you said, the serve? I mean, you had to spend a lot of hours, right, practicing the serve and coming to the net, because you were the greatest baseline player ever.
I think that it was all in my head about coming to the net, because I had a good technical volley. It's just getting my butt into the net. You know, it was like, you know, I just felt so safe at the baseline. I know I could out-rally anybody all day long because I was more, patience was one of my strengths. But I had to force myself, and I had to do it against Martina because she was coming to the net. So I had, and that was her strength. So I wanted to take her strength away. In order to do that, I would have to come into the net and dare her to pass me. And I'll never forget, it was early on in that match, I said, Chrissy, you've got to go in on her backhand, because that was her weak. She had a big forehand, and she kind of had a slice backhand, if you remember. And you got
pretty
go
good,
in.
Pretty good slice, though.
Pretty good.
Yeah, but you could come in on it.
Good for her approach, right. But not good for a passing
right,
shot.
Right, right, right.
So I remember the first time I came in, I hit her a slice, and she hit it in the bottom of the net. And I go,
the bell went off, right.
So it encouraged me to come in again. Second time I came into the net on her backhand, I think she just hit a sitter, and I just, like, put away the volley. And I'm like, okay, really? This is I could have been doing this for the last 2 years, really?
Right.
And then, you know, I just got that confidence. You just got to do it. You just got to keep doing it. So in answer to your question, what I needed to work on was my moving.
Okay.
You know, just cutting in and out of the corners, in and out of the court, and then just getting a little more speed on my serve, because it was a very mediocre serve.
So I think many of you know that Chrissy and I have worked together a lot at ESPN. We'll be working together again at the U.S. Open, which for me is a huge honor to be alongside her. And I got to tell you all something. You hear, when you hear her talk, you can understand how diligent she was, right, as a player, like figuring out what she needed to do. She's the same way in the broadcast booth. She's so diligent. She works her butt off. She prepares herself. Like, it's pretty impressive to see how much preparation she does to prepare. Yeah, give it up for that, absolutely. Because, you know, like, she's Chris Evert, okay? So she doesn't really have to do that, you know? I know a guy pretty close to me who just kind of shows up and he's like, you know, I'm Johnny Mack, so I'll do whatever I want. Okay. Anyway.
You guys are much better ad-libbing and off the cuff. I have to have my notes to study.
Well, this is a roundabout way for me to get to something you mentioned earlier, which is interesting, you know, at 13 years of age, but how the game has changed. So to you watching it and covering it the way we do now, obviously, there's more players, but the physicality of the game, right, has changed so much, and the speed of the game has changed. And I think, is that why it's harder for very young players to break through now to the top?
It's become more physical. In my day, it was more technical, and it was enough to be a great tennis player. You didn't necessarily have to be a great athlete.
Right.
Okay. I was a very good athlete, but I wasn't a great athlete. Okay, so that's, you know, I don't know if in this day and age I was growing up, I don't have no idea how I would do in this day and age. But
I have a pretty good idea.
Well, yeah. Okay, well, maybe
number one. Okay,
but yes, but I think what's interesting is everyone thinks, oh, the rackets, because half my career I used a wood racket, and then it went to graphite, but I think it's the rackets have changed, but more importantly, I think the strings have changed, because I just use Imperial gut, and now they have all kinds of different guts and artificial guts and you know, not artificial guts, but artificial strings. I think that's where they're getting more pop.
Right.
Also, the grip changes. Now they're using the Western grip, getting over and just really putting a lot of spin on it, making the ball heavier. The fitness level has changed. Now the tennis players are training like Olympic athletes, you know, whereas
right.
Before we weren't. We were putting in an hour or two in the gym a day, but we didn't have that, you know, Olympic athlete mentality. And they're so strict, down to the food, down to the sleep, down to the practice, down to, you know, it's just so much more, I don't want to say professional, but it's so much more intricate now. And it's attention to details,
right.
and it's there's a lot of information out there about matches that we didn't have before.
Right, everything on the internet and all the technology they can use.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Before I let you go, and thank you for doing this, Chrissy, and thank you all for coming out. We got the matches coming up shortly.
Thank
so
you guys.
I'll leave it with this, because we are here this weekend to celebrate tennis, to try to inspire the next generation. That's what we want to do with the Hall of Fame. But also, we want to celebrate the inductees that are coming in. So before I let you go, a word or two from you, Chrissy, about Bob and Mike Bryan. I was lucky enough to be their Davis Cup captain for many years. So they were amazing as players, as competitors, and really as role models. And of course, Maria Sharapova, who I know you followed for so long. A great player, one of only 10 women is Sharapova, along with Chris Evert, to win every major. And she won the French Open twice. So we'll give it up for them, but just want to hear a couple of thoughts from you on them.
Yeah, Bob and Mike, I talked a little bit last night about them. You know, they're the GOATs in doubles. You know, they have won 16 Grand Slams. They've won 483 weeks they've been ranked number one.
Correct.
That's a lot. And then I think like 119 tournament wins.
Titles.
So, I mean, they are the GOAT. And I think to do it as identical twins makes it even more special.
Right.
I mean, I'm sorry, but to play doubles with your sibling, I don't know if you ever played doubles with your
brother. I did a few times,
I played doubles with my younger sister, and, you know, I was borderline abusive to her. I mean, I'm telling you, when she missed a ball, she was my sister, so I could say something, but I mean, it was like, I'm such a singles player, you know, in the sense that I'll take the credit, and then I'll take the, you know, circumstances if I lose. But doubles, when things weren't in my control, I got really flustered.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in about them, I think they got along so well. They were in sync. They were, you know, they really complemented each other. But what I love about them is how they promote the game. I mean, they are at every tournament promoting tennis. You know, they're really ambassadors, great ambassadors to tennis. So, but their record in itself deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Maria, you know, I've watched Maria play a lot, and she was mentally the toughest player in her era. And I think one of the best competitors in any era. You know, the way she conducted herself, the sportsmanship, the professionalism, the coolness she showed on the court. And she inspired a lot of young women and girls to play the game of tennis, because she made it okay to be beautiful and elegant out there, but to still be strong and a killer, you know, and competitive. And she was giving a message for women to empower them. You know, this is okay to be this way. And I think more and more girls came to the game of tennis because of that. So I think that's a major contribution she's had.
Well, it's pretty clear that Chris Evert has had a major contribution and continues to give back to the sport of tennis, continues to help the underserved kids here and in Florida, and continues to be the living legend that she is. She doesn't need to be here, everybody, you know, but she's here. She loves coming here, and we thank you for being here being part of the weekend. And
thank you, Patrick. Yep. I can say the same about you, too.
Thank you. Thank you all. Enjoy the rest of the weekend, and we appreciate you being here.